Next year will be the 40th anniversary of your father's assassination. Mm-hmm. Looking back now, what would you say from this point, what is your father's legacy?
Well, I would say, number one, his legacy was focused on the concept of love. And what he tried to do was teach our society how to live together using the methods of nonviolence without destroying either person or property. I think he succeeded in developing the model, which we teach. We teach their six principles of nonviolence that we teach often. Our society just yet has not embraced it. And I think one of the things that's needed, particularly in the school system, is if we could get school systems to embrace the conflict resolution teaching and training, it gives young people an alternative to violence. I think if we don't give people an alternative, they will continue to do the same things that they are constantly exposed to. But it teaches you how to resolve your conflict without necessarily embracing violence. And that's what leadership has got to do. The other thing is, I think we've got to set a different tone even at our federal level, because we send contradictory messages to our young people. It's all right for us to go to war. In this case specifically, we weren't defending ourselves. We took a preemptive strike. So we just decided that there was something, and now that we found out that there are no weapons of mass destruction, that there really is not a connection with Iraq and Al Qaeda. I mean, there's a lot of things that are coming out now, and a lot of young people, tragically, have lost their lives for something that maybe we didn't need to do, and the cost is so exorbitant that we have a $9 trillion. I think it's a deficit. I'm trying to remember the specific technical term.
Right.
But, I mean, the question is, how are we going to get out of debt? I mean, we need to be concerned about these things, mm-hmm. and yet we keep spending monies that we don't have. So those are concerns that I certainly have and wonder how we're going to address as we hope to continue to provide leadership for the world.
What would you say the state of civil rights in America is in 2007?
Very, very good. I appreciate that question. I would say that we have been sort of dormant in relationship to civil rights over the last few years. I think the administration has been so preoccupied with terrorism that it really hasn't had an opportunity to focus on anything else. And as a result, one of the things we're doing on November 16th is we're going to Washington to have a peaceful demonstration at the Justice Department to ask the federal government to get involved in some of the cases that we've seen across America where we've seen due process and other things appear to be violated, whether it was in Gina, where we were a few weeks ago, or whether it was down in Florida with Martin Leandro in Palmdale, I believe. Well, that's Palmdale, California. There's another case in Palmdale. But or whether it's me and Williams in West Virginia, another case of a young lady who was raped, the number of hate crimes that we see arising. For example, the nooses, there have been over 40 nooses that have been hung, and people don't realize the gravity of an issue like that, that it is a hate crime. It is something that certainly is very impressive.
Why do you think we're starting to see the symbol of the noose start to show up again?
I don't know why I would what I would attribute it to, but I think that when people when things are very tough, meaning economically, the war has gone sour, people are losing their lives, people are losing their houses, they begin to try to find someone to blame. And it's just some of it is prank activity, and there are no consequences for hanging a noose at this point. I mean, as I said, the hate crime issue seems to be growing. And we've got to find a way to weed it out and to reduce it. And one of the ways you do that is by enforcing those rules that are on the books. For example, at the school in Gina High School, the Justice Department and the U.S. Attorney said that they could have prosecuted, but they chose not to because they were juveniles. And so they wanted the school system to kind of deal with it. But until America makes a consequence for doing something, then people are going to continue to do it. And instead of seeing it go away, it seems to come more and more. There is a growing number. There are a growing number of subversive kind of groups who also feel, I think, with the change in America, meaning the Hispanic and Latino population growing, I think there are some that are very afraid for their own existence. So it's a lashing out.
How in our own personal lives and on a community level can we further civil rights?
Well, I think there are a number of things that have to be done. From a personal level, I think we have to, if there's an interest, number one, we need to reach out to our federal elected officials through email and congresspersons, because that's really where that kind of legislation is going to begin and be implemented at the federal level. The government, federal government, I should say, has really been sort of dormant. And the gains that were made in relationship to civil rights were not made at the state level. They were made at the federal level. My dad was able to appeal to the Justice Department, to our federal government, and the federal government would send in a Justice Department to monitor, sometimes sending in federal troops. I'm not suggesting that level has to be done today, but the law, there are laws on the books that are just not enforced, and the federal government is responsible for making sure that the laws are enforced. So I think that what needs to happen, or what I would like to see, is a mobilized, coalesced effort, and hopefully that's one of the things we're doing. That's why we're encouraging people of goodwill from all over the nation to come to Washington at 12 noon on November 16th, and a coalition has formed to actually march around the Justice Department to appeal to the Justice Department to get involved in these cases, and specifically the hate crimes that we've seen of the nooses across America.
Is Realizing the Dream an organization that reaches out mostly to businesses or to other community organizations?
No, it reaches out really to communities in general, which all communities do have business leaders. So it's important, that's an important aspect of what we do, is to reach out to some of the business leaders when we go into the community. But it's really community leaders and community-based organizations that are already focused on addressing poverty and building bridges with them to help them, maybe with technical assistance to help them. For example, we may go into, there are about 700 Martin Luther King Jr. thoroughfares across America. I would say the majority of them are blighted. And so if we go into communities to help those communities identify the resources to put into revitalizing those areas, that's one example of something that we as an organization may consider as a project. As I say, there are over 700 here in the country.
And what are some programs that you've seen work in other cities that a city like Indianapolis may adopt here to help encourage education in the urban areas and in inner city people?
Well, one of the programs, and I talked about not so much specifically or germane to education, was the component that provides affordable housing. And that is something that is needed universally. Now, I think as it relates to education, we have got to bring to some of the best and brightest. Well, number one, our system of education, and I should say public primary and secondary education. I don't mean college and university level education, but I think that entire system has to be revitalized and revamped. I think the curriculum to how we reach out to kids. We may have to look at having a larger movement for charter schools. We may have to look at schools that go back to segregating boys from girls so that we can maximize, get the best. I mean, anything that's a distraction for education is bad. And now, of course, that has to be volunteer-based. You can't mandate it. But certainly, we've seen where charter schools, some are working. We've seen where education that's not co-ed in some communities is working. We've seen some curriculum, minimum curriculum changes that are working. And, you know, I think we have to find a way to capture the imagination of young people at an early age so that they will have a quest and yearning for knowledge. And we are not doing that right now because we've not modified our system of education for, I don't know, 50 years. We've been doing the same thing the last 50 years. The only thing we're doing different is today we're teaching people the test. Mm-hmm. And that's not education. That's not really learning. That's I don't know what it is, but it's failing. That's all I know.
On a community level, what are some ways that Realizing the Dream can help community leaders, churches, schools? Do you have a program in Indianapolis where people can come, or are you open to opening new avenues here in Indianapolis to helping to further that cause of nonviolence and conflict resolution?
Oh, absolutely. We would love to be able to come here. We do not have actually a bit. We're not the kind of organization that has a chapter. But what we will do is one of the cities, this is one of the few cities, we've got about 20 more to do, or communities, and Indianapolis we've not been to yet. But we will. It is certainly one of the cities that we plan to come to and to look at some of the community-based organizations that we can work in conjunction with. And those community organizations, if they invited us, we'd certainly be willing to come in and do that. Now, what we have is a network of 35 communities already all over the country. And we brought those people together on October 24th in Washington, and we had meetings with some members of Congress who were very receptive and supportive of what we're talking about doing. So those are the kind of things that I think we can bring to the table. We did not meet with Senator Lugar or Senator Bayh. But we met with a few senators. We're going to be going back very soon to Washington to do that.
And if someone in Indianapolis were interested in taking on, you know, necessarily a chapter, how would they go about what would the process be? Where would they go to find out more information?
Well, of course, our website is realizingthedream.org. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can find out about us and reach out to us, and vice versa. We'll be able to reach out to you through our website. We're based in Atlanta, but as I said, we plan to come back to this community. I also have a cousin who's a minister here, Reverend Derek King, and who works at Martin University. And so I plan to be in touch with him as well.
Good question. I actually have an agency that represents me here and domestically. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just know that they actually are responsible for many of the presentations I do, whether it's to colleges and universities or to organizations. And, you know, obviously it's certainly a very special honor to have the opportunity to speak to business leaders in the great state of Indiana, and specifically in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. What is your speech going to be about tonight?
What I primarily, it's a broad presentation, mm-hmm. but it focuses primarily on the topic is my father's dream, my vision, mm-hmm. In terms of how we achieve where he left off. So it talks a little bit, it speaks specifically to business leaders and some of the things that I would hope that business leaders would consider doing. Particularly in a difficult economy. This is obviously a very difficult time for our nation. And yet some businesses are still doing very well. So there are a number of things that I think businesses could do. Also, you know, obviously, I talk about the honorees briefly because it's very important. I know they are honoring a community leader, an elected official, and a business leader. I'm going to briefly accentuate that, but primarily when we look at, for example, where we are in our nation, as we approach next year will be the 40th anniversary of the assassination of my father, and I remember coming here a few years back at the designation where I guess it's a park now, that where Robert Kennedy actually spoke and a crowd had assembled.
and this is one of the few cities that did not erupt in violence because of an appeal that he made, and I think I came with President Clinton to inaugurate that park back a few years. So it's also, I mean, I'm honored to be back here as we approach that 40th anniversary. I have an organization that I started called Realizing the Dream, which is designed to do three things: to focus on conflict resolution and nonviolence training, secondly, targeted youth leadership training, and the third component is community and economic development. Excuse me. In that vein, I've just completed visited 35 communities across America, from urban to suburban to rural, to Appalachian, to Native American. We're going to go to 50 before it's over, but we've done 35 and actually completed a report that we submitted to members of Congress on October 24th. And also a documentary was done that's going to be shown on a small cable network called American Life Television on the 14th and 15th of next week. And then ultimately we want to get it on public television, but it's called Poverty in America. And it really focuses on what we did was, in each community, we brought together business leaders, religious leaders, community leaders, and elected officials. We had a town hall meeting. We actually visited each area where poverty is most prevalent and talked and dialogued to people about how can we really get these communities moving in a different direction. We found various fibers of connecting things in each community. For example, in every community, from even Pine Ridge, South Dakota, where the Lakota tribe is based, to Gary, Indiana, to Dade County in Miami, to Cook County in Chicago, to Wayne County in Detroit, Gary, Benton Harbor, East St. Louis, Los Angeles, Oakland. I'm just naming some of the places we went. But in each of those communities, we found a system of education that is really challenged. It is not producing the best quality of young persons that we would hope they would, and not preparing young people for jobs. For example, in communities where there were jobs, the young people were not adequately prepared to be able to assume those jobs because they were high-tech jobs. Obviously, was a lack of affordable housing. In some areas, crime was high. Obviously, there was a lack of health care. Yeah, so there are various themes. No matter where you went, those four or five things stuck out in each community. But again, our goal is to collaborate as Realizing the Dream. We're small in size, but our goal is to collaborate with those organizations and communities that are focused on reducing poverty. For example, in Detroit, there's an organization that has put about 2,500 persons in homes. And we took that group, and they put people in homes, they put them out. I don't know how they did it, starter homes, with automobiles, and furnished their homes. And this has been over 8 or 10 year period of time. About 3 people have foreclosed out of 2,500. So you've got, 2,495 people, or 96, who are still in their homes over a 10-year period. And then what we did was we took that program to one of the cities we went to, San Antonio, and now they're looking at putting a model together there, and also in Miami. And we want to take them to other communities. So things that are working, the goal is to showcase those things that are working and build bridges, merging people together so that you can begin to address issues around poverty in America.
And do you think that business owners in particular have a responsibility to help the community and help improve?
Well, I actually think we all do, but certainly businesses and business leaders clearly have a responsibility. Because business leaders are benefiting from the community, and the more people that we have who can become a viable workforce, the more goods and services that people will need, but also will purchase. And so it's mutually beneficial. So it's in the interest of business leaders to really find ways to focus on how do you create the opportunity for people to lift themselves up.
And what do you think of efforts by business leaders here, like the people who are going to be honored tonight?
What I can't speak specifically to them, because obviously each community designs and selects its own leadership. I'm sure that those individuals, I'll learn probably about them very quickly. But I think that it's very significant that every year a business leader, a community leader, and an elected official for the work that they are doing in the state of Indiana is recognized. I think that brings attention. And the other thing that it does is it creates a spirit of participation, because others will want to do something hopefully incredible, so that they too could be highlighted or recognized. That's not the motivation of a lot of people to be recognized, but it's a good thing that they are recognized for what they're doing, and it may stimulate other ideas from other people.
And when you've been interacting with local leaders in general, how open have businesses been to what specific efforts have businesses been making, I guess? What have you noticed? To fight poverty, business leaders?
I think people are more in a listening mode to some of the suggestions. It's my view that every community has to forge its own plan to address the issues, whether it's homelessness, whether it is a poor system of education, whether it is just a lack of jobs and the opportunity. I mean, obviously, entrepreneurship is one of the components that must be promoted, because the more the large manufacturing days are gone, or at least are leaving. The day of someone being able to work 3-4 generations in a factory, that day is moving fastly away. And so we've got to have a spirit of entrepreneurship, because that entrepreneur is going to, in fact, be able to hire the small business, 3 and 4 persons, where the mass of the majority of people are located in our society. So I forgot what your question was, but
if there's anything specific that businesses have been doing.
Yeah, but what I see, and what I think, and what my responsibility is, what I believe part of what I must do is to challenge and encourage businesses to actually do more, because I don't think that any of us individually or collectively are doing enough. It's clear to me just by the population of homelessness that exists all across America that none of us are doing enough. I mean, we're basically just scratching the surface. So I want to find a way to positively challenge businesses, not to ostracize and criticize, but to really challenge us to do better. I mean, I think we've got to look at alternative fuel sources. We've got to develop different kinds of vehicles that certainly use less fuel, maybe the hybrid cars, for example. More of that has to happen. We cannot continue to depend on the Middle East oil. I mean, that's why we're in this quagmire, part of why we're in a quagmire today. We won't be able to continue to finance this war. And God forbid if we, you know, have to consider even going to war against Iran. I mean, it's just not, you can't do it. My point is, that's why we've got to turn inward to some degree, as opposed to just thinking everything's going to be all right. Then we have to learn how to be more conservative as a nation from a conservation standpoint. I think I give you an example in my community and in Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. As you may have heard, there's a water crisis. And some of the large businesses and wealthy people just said, "Well, look, I'll just pay the water bill. It's fine. I'm going to pay the bill." Well, the water company turned their water off, and they came to work the next day because they were told not to water, and they were going to try to buck the system and just pay for it. Well,
And if we are working together in a collective way, then the resource that is so needed will not run out, and all of us will be able to, be able to be sustained for a longer period of time, because global warming is a serious crisis in our nation and world, and we no longer can ignore it.
And is there anything in particular you want people who are attending your speech today to come away with, or any particular effect you want to have?
Well, this is more of a, hopefully, a motivational and inspirational presentation. Mm-hmm. And if I could say any one thing, it would be that all of us must, if all of us could just do a little bit more, then we probably would be able to create a better society. My mom taught me as a child to love myself, to love my family, to love my community, and to have a love of God. And that's the motto that I try to share everywhere that I go. Not that everyone will do that, but hopefully we could at least garner something from a positive message like that.